special this is a special Municipal Services Committee meeting at CROG for the 28th of November. So second order of business is to ask for any public comment. Any public comment at this point? Do not see anyone raising their hand. So we'll move on to the topic of the day, which is discussion, an overall discussion about stormwater management. This is an issue that we all deal with in a variety of different ways and to different degrees. And so we thought it would be important to start a conversation. This issue is not going away and probably only intensify as regulatory rules change and we have different impacts from weather events. So Matt, I'm gonna hand it over to you and you can provide an introduction of our guests.
Great, thank you, Peter. Good afternoon, everyone. Matt Hart here. Hope you had a wonderful holiday and thank you for joining us at today's meeting. As Peter explained, we want to continue our conversation on regional approaches to stormwater management. We know many of our member towns are dealing with this issue, whether you're an MDC town that's dealing with street flooding and flooding in residential properties, or you're one of our smaller communities that's struggling with MS4 requirements, et cetera. You know, we want to see what we can do potentially to approach this as a region. So we're going to have a three-part discussion for you today on this topic. We're going to start off with a presentation from Mary Looney from UConn, NEMO, and CLEAR. And Mary's going to talk about some of the programs the state has in place, including the new stormwater utility law and how stormwater utilities work. So thank you in advance for that, Mary. And then I've invited a couple of guests from the engineering firm of CDM Smith. We've got Joe LaLiberty and Cindy Bauman, who've done a lot of work on stormwater management here in our region, working for the MDC towns, as well as other communities around the state. And they have a current project underway in our southeastern COG that I think could be very instructive for us. And then we'll wrap up with a discussion on next steps. And Maureen Goulet from our CROG team is assisting me with this. And we will have a recommendation for you concerning next steps as well. So if that works, Peter, we'd like to ask Mary Looney to lead off with her presentation. Welcome, Mary.
Sounds great.
Hi, thank you for having me today. I'm just going to share my screen. Okay. Can everyone see this okay? Perfect.
Looks great.
As Matt said, my name is Mary Looney. I am the Municipal Stormwater Educator for CT NEMO, or Nonpoint Education for Municipal Officials. We are part of UConn CLEAR, which is the Center for Land Use Education and Research. And today I'm going to be talking about stormwater utilities and the MS4 permit. So just a bit of background, MS4 stands for Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System. It all started with the Clean Water Act in 1972. MS4 Phase 1 came away in 1990, and this was for MS4 serving populations greater than 100,000. In 1999, MS4 Phase 2 came in. That was for smaller municipalities, and that really brought in a lot of the Connecticut towns that are regulated by this permit now. And then in 2017, DEEP revised the CT permit. So it went from 17 pages to 68 pages. It also brought in a few more towns. So as you can imagine, it's quite a hefty permit. There's lots to it. As it stands, 121 out of 169 towns are regulated by the permit. And it's made up of 6 minimum control measures and then 1 impaired waters monitoring section. So these are just some of the tasks of the permit. These are the big ones. Certainly not all of them, but some of these include dry and wet weather monitoring, stormwater system mapping, you know, requiring LIDs in your regulations, disconnecting impervious cover, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But as you can imagine, all of these tasks, as well as all the minor tasks, really do add up to a significant cost for these towns. And there is no direct funding available for MS4 compliance. A lot of it just comes from general funds, and that, you know, also comes a lot with competition for other capital projects. So it can be quite a hefty burden. So just a quick overview or reminder, minimum control measure 5 kind of focuses on DCIA, or directly connected impervious area. And this is the impervious area, so the pavements, the roads, the sidewalks, the rooftops, which all drain stormwater runoff directly into catch basins and directly into local water bodies. So all that stormwater runs along that impervious pavement. It collects all of these different pollutants like bacterias, nitrogen and phosphorus from fertilizers, and it just drains right into those water bodies. So it's different from a sewer system, which goes into treatment and filters all that out. So the permit really focuses on DCIA disconnection. And that's when the minimum amount of the water quality volume is retained on site, or basically when you're infiltrating that first inch of runoff. And that infiltration refers to putting it through a pervious area, just as, you know, natural grass and soils, to help infiltrate all of those pollutants out of the runoff before going into the water body. So the permit requires that towns create a plan to disconnect 2% of their DCIA by 2022. Something that's really important to note about this, if you are a town that's regulated by this permit, is you do have a 5-year look back. So going all the way back to 2012, any disconnection, whether it's private or public, can be counted towards your 2% goal. So it's really important to go back and look at those records. And then the towns are also required to disconnect 1% annually after that. So that really adds up, that disconnection. They're also required to track and report this progress in their annual report. So green stormwater infrastructure, or GSI, also commonly heard as low impact development, or LID, is really the key to disconnecting this DCIA. And basically what this is just a natural method to absorb stormwater runoff. It acts as a filter to prevent those pollutants from entering the waterways, as I just mentioned. And what it really gets at is that pre-development hydrology, kind of getting it back to that point. And there are tons of different methods for GSI implementation. You know, some of these you might have heard before, such as rain gardens, tree box filters, pervious pavement, bioswales, bioretentions. And while I won't spend too much time on them today going in depth, I do want to point out that on our website, we have tons of resources for you. And the link to this will be at the end of the slides. But like this picture on the slide here is, you know, a chunk of our website dedicated just to rain gardens. I'm really breaking down what they are, breaking down the steps to them. We have a rain garden app for you, which does all the math calculations out for you. So it's really handy. Another example that I like to point out is the legal authorities. This is another requirement of the permit that basically requires towns to go through their land use regulations, so their subdivision and zoning regulations, to remove the barriers to LID, as well as promote LID practices for developers. And this can be an incredibly efficient way in increasing the amount of disconnection you have going on. So the example I like to give is in Colchester. In 2015, they updated their zoning regulations and made it so that no more than 75% of their parking lots can be made up of impervious cover. So that remaining 25% either has to conserve the natural pervious surfaces already on site, like trees and grass, or they have to use that pervious material to soak in all that stormwater runoff. And since then, they have more than 10 new private installations of pervious paving, as well as 3 projects for local schools in the work. So all that disconnection, whether it be private or public, does count towards your 2% goal, as well as your 1% annual goal. Just again, some resources we have for you. The link will be available at the end, but we have, you know, tracking sheets for when you're doing your disconnection. We have tons of LID guides, design templates, maintaining LIDs, examples throughout the state and throughout New England for you to look at, as well as a breakdown of that legal authority requirement. We kind of do all that dirty work for you so that you can just jump right in. And just a quick update on the permit. It did expire June 30th of 2022. And if you've been paying attention, that was a few months ago. But DEEP is still encouraging towns to remain compliant with the permit. We are expecting an extension of this permit as is by the end of this year. And so as is means no modifications, no re-registration, everything remains the same. And we are also expecting a permit update with modifications. We're expecting this next year, or once the 2020 census data is available. This is just a discrepancy between the census data and EPA, just on a couple definitions that are also found in the permit that need to be kind of clarified before anything continues on. Again, with these modifications, we're not expecting anything huge, nothing like the 2017 permit, just maybe a couple more towns and a little bit more monitoring. But again, for towns in compliance, biggest costs will be related to disconnecting that impervious cover. Like I said, they do have to continue that 1% annually. And on top of this, you know, also thinking about the increases in frequency of storms that we're going to have with climate change, you know, how taxing that can be on infrastructure, especially aging infrastructure. You know, Connecticut is really developing and it's really adding all of that impervious cover. And so not only does that contribute to the pollution itself, but it also contributes to that volume of stormwater that you have, which again is a really big burden on some of these kind of aging infrastructures. So it really does add up in costs. And that's why I wanna bring in to a stormwater utility. So a stormwater utility is basically just an entity that collects fees and it generates direct, equitable, and stable funding for stormwater management. Those are the really big key aspects of a stormwater utility. So these funds are dedicated solely to stormwater management. They're not diverted to other needs. You don't need to keep pulling from a general fund or compete with other capital projects. It can be adjusted as your needs change. So if you are, you know, if you really have certain areas where your infrastructure is just really giving out, you can adjust the fees so that you're bringing in you know, the charges that you need to kind of fund those changes that need to be made. And honestly, probably in my opinion, the most important part about this is that it is a far equitable funding source than property taxes. I think a lot of people confuse it with being a property tax, and it's not. It's not a rain tax. It's not any of those. It's based off of the amount of impervious cover you have on your property. And it's especially equitable because it includes tax-exempt organizations. So you're able to get those fees from universities, from hospitals, from government agencies. Again, it basically just functions the same as any other utility, like water or sewage. The more water you use, the higher your water utility bill will be. You know, the more you contribute to the stormwater system, the more your stormwater fee will be. And they are increasing in popular. This map is from Dr. Warren Campbell from Western Kentucky University. He does these great kind of overviews of how stormwater utilities have kind of progressed throughout the years across the nation. So right now there are over 2,000 utilities, kind of estimating almost to be closer towards 2,500 utilities in 41 states. And just to kind of give you an idea, in 2007, there were 800. So these really have boomed. There is no size limit. The largest one is in Los Angeles County with 10 million people that's serving. The smallest is in Indian Creek Village, Florida with 88 people. So, you know, I think a lot of people say like, we're not big enough. I don't think there's a town in Connecticut that has less than 88 people. But the average house or the kind of the average population that these do serve is around 16,500. The average fee for a single family home is $6 a month. Again, this kind of varies, some are less, some are more. And we do have two in Connecticut. I'm sure most of you are aware of the one in New London, which was implemented a couple years back. New Britain also implemented theirs just this past summer. So diving into the bill a bit more, or the law, effective July 1st, 2021, any municipality may, by ordinance adopted by its legislative body, designate any existing board or commission or establish a new board or commission to act as the stormwater authority for such municipality. And basically this established or new stormwater program will and this is, you know, this is what you require, but it's not what you're limited to. But it will control construction and post-construction runoff, control and abate stormwater pollution, illicit discharge detection and elimination. If you are someone who already deals with the MS4 permit, these probably sound very familiar to you. Public education and outreach. And then these are some of the new ones. Establishing the boundaries of your district, which the Stormwater Authority applies to. The administration of the program, so who's going to be involved, kind of all that billing. And then the recommended fees to carry out the above. So getting into the fees a bit more, when setting your fees, you shall at least consider, again, you're not limited to this, but the area of the property containing the impervious surfaces, the land use types, so residential, non-residential, commercial, industrial, and the property values. On our website, we have a whole breakdown of all the different types of fee systems that you can use. Some are certainly more equitable than others, but you know, you can kind of shape it to fit what works best with your community. And just some limits on fees, some things to point out about the law. No more than 15% of total fees collected can come from hospitals. So it's kind of your max is 15%. You can also, you know, hospitals can be exempt. So it can be a range. Again, it's really flexible. You can tailor it towards your community. For farms, forests, open space, or state property, you can only levy fees on impervious cover that drains specifically to a municipal separate storm sewer system or MS4. And you must offer partial fee reduction credits for on-site BMPs that reduce, retain, and treat stormwater on any property. So the key word is any there. So you have to offer them for residential, for your non-residential, for your municipal, or for your commercial or industrial. You can choose what BMPs they are and how much that fee reduction is for, but you do have to offer them. So I just want to give a couple quick examples. Raleigh, North Carolina, they had their stormwater utility implemented in 2004. Just kind of going back to that disconnection piece in the fall of 2021, they implemented a massive 1,700 square foot bioretention area. It contained 6 trees, more than 750 plants, and annually it removes 6 pounds of nitrogen and 109 pounds of suspended solids, keeping that out of their local bodies of water. And just this past October, they announced their GSI plan. So this plan is funded by their stormwater utility. It focuses on working with private developers to increase their GSI usage. It creates a dedicated maintenance and training program for their Department of Public Works, as well as kind of goes back to that legal authority that I was talking about before, and incorporates GSI into their regulations, as well as into their city planning reports. Again, going back to that credit system, it can kind of sound like a burden that it's required, but it is such a great opportunity to incentivize different properties to incorporate GSI and to kind of contribute to that disconnection piece. So Portland, Oregon implemented their utility in 2013. They offer credits for all different property types, just like our law requires. Their residential actually offers up to 100% for properly managing stormwater runoff from rooftops. So this includes dry wells, French drains, lawns, rain gardens, rain barrels. 100% is a lot. I don't know if I would recommend that. But it certainly kind of demonstrates just how much incentive you really can provide to these homeowners. It's a really great way to also alleviate some of the criticism that I think municipals can kind of get a bit worrisome about. So if you're allowing these properties, especially residential properties, to be able to reduce their fee, you know, that's really important. I also just want to mention quickly regionalization. Stormwater knows no boundaries. You know, what one town does impacts another town. It kind of really all influences each other. So the law does allow for regionalization of a stormwater utility. They can enter into contract with any municipal or regional entity, such as a COG, to accomplish the purposes of your stormwater utility. So just a quick example, the Wyoming Valley Sanitary Authority, this is actually in Pennsylvania. They originally formed in 1962 to address wastewater, but then in 2017, they created their regional stormwater management program, added it on. they came to be about as the MS4 administrator for 31 towns within the state. So they quite literally cover all of the MS4 permit requirements for these towns and then just tell them what to put in the annual reports. And then the annual reports get sent in individually by those towns. And then in 2019, they implemented their stormwater utility fee. They use a tier system. So the average household pays about $4.80 a month. And just to kind of give you an idea about how cost effective this can really be, they were going to have 455 annual or individual stormwater projects across these towns. It was going to be a total of $69 million. And when you looked at it on a regional scale, it brought it down to just 65 larger scale projects for a total of $12 million, which was all funded by their stormwater utility. On top of this stormwater utility, they do have little saving accounts for each individual municipality. And this money is allocated solely for smaller scale projects that municipalities just kind of want to do on their own. So it really acts as a great way to kind of relieve that burden and that stress off of municipalities for both MS4 compliance, as well as funding costs. And just some quick resources again, we have our link down at the bottom, we have a QR code in the corner, but on our website, you know, we really do break down that law that goes into a place, what a stormwater utility is, again, different fee systems, different credit systems, different examples from across the nation. We do have a stormwater utility webinar series. All of our past webinars are posted on our website with links to their slides as well. We are hoping to get one more in before we kind of wrap up the series, hopefully from that Wyoming Sanitary Authority. We're just kind of waiting to hear back from them, so we'll keep you posted on that. And then as well, we are planning to have a workshop in the spring to kind of break down the nuts and bolts of implementing a stormwater utility. And finally, just if you are interested in more of that MS4 compliance, we have a fact sheet for you, which breaks down examples from across the nation of different ways stormwater utilities have been used for MS4 compliance. So once again, my name is Mary Looney. Please don't hesitate to reach out with any questions about MS4, stormwater utility related, anything at all. You can find my email there, all the links to our websites there. You know the whole deal with the QR code, so.
Thank you so much, Mary, for that very, very informative presentation. Would you Oh, that's great. Would you be able to, by any chance, to post your presentation in the chat?
Yes, absolutely.
In attendance today could have it. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Peter, I would suggest we see if anyone has any quick questions for Mary before we move on to Cindy and Joe.
That sounds fantastic. So I'll open up the questions now. Feel free to jump on in. We're pretty informal here. So anybody have any questions for Mary at this juncture? I don't see anybody raising their hand. So let's move on, Matt. And Mary, if you can hang on, that would be fantastic for us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mary. We may have more questions for you at the end. So very pleased to have with us today, Cindy Bauman and Joe LaLiberty from CDM Smith. Many of us are probably familiar with them, having worked with them in the past. And I certainly had very good experience working with them with the town of West Hartford. And I know they've worked for the MDC on various projects as well. I thought Cindy and Joe would be very helpful for us today if they could just help define the problem a little bit for our region and then add to Mary's comments with respect to stormwater utilities and then talk about a project they're doing in another part of our state that I think would be relevant for us. So welcome, Cindy and Joe.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for the kind words, and we're happy that we can present to this today. I'm just gonna turn it right over to Cindy, and she's gonna jump into the presentation, and then I'll be available after with Cindy for any questions and comments.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
You have an echo, Cindy. That may be because I plugged in twice.
Do I have an echo now?
You do not.
Okay, good. So, okay, thank you, Matt, and the Capital Region Council of Government. So I'm gonna go over a few things in my agenda. I'm gonna start with the stormwater overview, which I'll do quick. I don't duplicate too much of Mary's slides, which I'm happy about. So I'll go over that quick, and then stormwater utilities. And as Matt had mentioned, I do have an example from the Southeastern Connecticut Council of Governments that I'm wrapping up right now, their pilot study actually. So many of you probably already know that, you know, natural environment, you get quite a bit of infiltration, you get minimal runoff and evaporation as well. So you get a lot less runoff. And then when it's developed, you get a lot more. So the big difference is you're getting less infiltration and more runoff. And this kind of ties into what Mary had presented with respect to the impervious cover and the stormwater utility, which I will get into a little later. But, you know, your single family homes and the multifamily and all the way up to a regional mall. So the impervious cover is directly related to the runoff. So I do have some photos of West Hartford, actually, from August 2021, where it does show flooding. And this actually happens to be Trout Brook Drive. And I assume many of you remember the August 2021 storm. And so we have flooding as an issue. We also have both the sanitary sewer and the storm drain, where this kind of, this graphic just kind of depicts how you can have then stormwater inflow into your sanitary sewer as well as infiltration because of whether there's cracks in your sewer system, in your drainage system, or whether there's also direct connections from stormwater getting into the sewer. And that is a big issue in the Capital Region. And so what is also being done in the Capital Region is currently there's quite a few connections of stormwater that are directly connected to your sewer system, and it's surcharging that system. So the left side is typically what is in the Capital Region with respect to having your roof leaders connected, maybe your driveway drainage, and even your sump pumps. And the goal is to take that stormwater out of the sewer and put it into the town drainage systems. And so on the right side, you do see where we disconnected the roof leaders, we've disconnected the sump pumps, and we've disconnected the driveways so that stormwater actually has its own drainage system. Next slide just kind of shows a little bit about stormwater pollution. Stormwater pollution is from multiple sources, whether it's, you know, from the roadway getting into the catch basins, whether it's from construction or fertilizer, animal waste. And all of that gets into your drainage systems, gets into your waterways. So like Mary had mentioned, all of that, whether it's water quality, whether it's infiltration, whether it's impervious area, Mary already went into the municipal separate storm sewer system. And luckily I just have this one slide, so I'm not gonna go into this in too much, but the MS4 includes the 6 minimum measures plus the wet weather monitoring. And in order to help you with your MS4, as well as your capital improvements projects and your just stormwater management in general, what we are looking at is stormwater utilities for a lot of these municipalities. So just a little, I know Mary had mentioned some quite a bit about stormwater utilities. So some of this is probably repetitive where, you know, it is fee-based, like Mary said, it's based directly like your water, your wastewater, your electric utilities. It's based on what you need from the system or what is the services provided to you that's directly stormwater related. And as she had mentioned this too, there's the tax base, which is kind of the traditional stuff that most municipalities are doing right now, where your taxes fund your stormwater management program. And a stormwater utility or stormwater authority then actually goes to a user fee where it's based directly on that impervious area. And what I find helpful is this is an example of a stormwater utility that we did. And it shows that under tax base on the left side, that the single family homes are the ones that are contributing most to funding whatever your tax support. So that does include your stormwater. And the big thing is that it's not proportional to the impervious area. And the big thing you find is like tax exempt properties, and then even commercial and industrial is a very small portion of what funds you get. While if you go to a fee based where it's actually based on the impervious area, it's much more equitable. And so it's directly related to your impervious area, and it actually then you get the fees based on the contribution of flow or the generation of runoff. And so now I'm actually going to go over, we are working right now with the Southeastern Connecticut Council of Governments, and of all the municipalities within the Southeastern Connecticut Council of Governments, there's four municipalities that are part of this pilot program. And the program was funded by CIRCA, and it was a grant that CCOG got to do this pilot study to do a feasibility of stormwater utilities within Preston, Ledyard, Waterford, and Stonington. And so we did a document review of their NPDES permit, their MS4 stormwater plan, their GIS data, their annual budgets, their infrastructure, any CIP programs or projects that they have. We also interviewed every municipality several times, went over their existing budgets, their funding, their options for billing as well. So we've done a lot of coordination. We actually just submitted our draft report for this project. And so this project is almost complete. But the existing conditions that we did for each municipality, we did an evaluation of their MS4 compliance, their operations and maintenance with respect to stormwater, their capital improvement projects for stormwater, and then their program management for stormwater. And we did not include the MS4 compliance for Preston because they are not an MS4 municipality, but the other three municipalities participating in this pilot study were MS4 municipalities. So we did a questionnaire with them. We filled out different forms to figure out how they were with respect to compliance with their MS4, kind of how they are with respect to industry standards and other municipalities with the other items as well, O&M, CIP, and program management. The other thing we did is we went through their annual budgets and also had meetings with many different departments to figure out their existing stormwater costs. So this is for all of the items, their MS4, their CIP, their O&M, and their program management. And so for the different municipalities, there's a range. And as you would guess, Preston was a lot lower. They do not have any MS4 costs right now, while Stonington and Waterford were a lot higher. So that's their annual costs for their stormwater program. And then we broke it out just when we did our existing evaluation in a per capita cost right now. We also discussed with them and identified a gap that each municipality had. And so they identified staff that they thought they needed or equipment and different things that they, so we got a town perceived gap from them and we added it to the existing cost so we can kind of see where they are today and where they would like to be. The next thing we did is we did an evaluation of their impervious area. And the nice thing is that the 2012 data that UConn DEP has actually already has all the impervious areas identified. So we do have that layer on the GIS. So we were able for each municipality to come up with a total impervious area. And then we were also went based on different land use, whether it was a residential, commercial, industrial, and we were able to come up with a single family unit rate structure for each municipality. And then we also assessed tiered rates for that single family units, because some municipalities, this single family unit was pretty uniform. While some of the other municipalities, we went with like a tier rate that might have included multifamilies or other options. And then we came up with the equivalent residential unit to use for all the commercial industrial properties. We also then went and looked at their billing requirements. We had a meeting with each municipality to determine what current bills they have. And for many of the four municipalities, they were very limited. A lot of their utilities were private. A lot of them, like their sewer, didn't cover all their municipality, or they might have had like four different water districts. And there are a lot of different scenarios, but we evaluated each one. We made recommendations with respect to how they could bill and some options for billing. And then we also developed an implementation plan for them. We did their, actually it was a 5-year plan. So each year they would increase their costs so that they started with existing and then they got to that perceived gap so that they could be where they wanted to be like 5 years from now. And so then we developed, we've actually already submitted a draft feasibility report, which went over all the information that I just presented. And it gave each municipality an idea of how they could implement a stormwater utility. This time we did not look at a regional authority for them. It was only individuals for each municipality. And that's what they currently have. And this project also did not include one of the key components, which is public outreach and public education. For a stormwater utility really to be successful, you really need to get people on board, stakeholders, especially the property owners that have a lot of impervious area, so that they're on board and do a lot of that public education and outreach. So that's all I have with respect to, you know, the stormwater in general, and then our stormwater utility project that we're currently doing with the Southeast Connecticut Council of Government.
Thank you very much, Cindy, for your informative presentation as well. One point I wanted to emphasize before we open it up for Q&A again, Peter. Recall the slide Cindy presented showing the direct connection between our many of our residential properties and a sanitary sewer system. As Cindy highlighted, that is a very significant issue within our region. You know, we probably have thousands upon thousands of those connections throughout the MDC towns alone. So that is something a little bit unique to our part of the state that we'll have to contend with as we move forward. And many of you are acutely familiar with that. So, Peter, I would suggest we now see if people have questions for Cindy, Joe, or Mary as well before we talk about next steps.
Absolutely. Thank you, Cindy, for that presentation. And as Matt said, let's open it up to questions. We've got some great folks with some good information to share with us. So let's see what kind of questions we have for them at this point. No, I know we're a shy group Monday after having a few days off, but
I actually do have a quick question for Cindy. When you guys are doing, when you did your feasibility specifically for Stonington, I know that for the MS4, Stonington is split up into kind of two groups, the town of Stonington and the borough of Stonington. Did you do a feasibility just as a combined kind of?
Yes, it included both the borough and the town.
Gotcha.
And I learned quite a bit about like what the town's responsible for and what the borough's responsible mm-hmm. for and how they share services and stuff.
Cool. Great. Thank you.
Yep.
And Cindy, Joe, I'm not sure if you are familiar enough with it, but how did those four towns come together for the study? Was it a volunteer?
Mm-hmm. Or? Yeah. So Southeastern Connecticut COG asked for volunteers within their COG, and those four stepped forward.
Great. And how long did it take to do the feasibility study up until the draft report, approximately?
It was like 4 to 6 months. It wasn't that long. I think we started in July or June.
Mm-hmm. Wait, so there wasn't a significant amount of public education or outreach at this stage in the game?
Correct.
Okay.
So, because they didn't have the funding for it, but they are, if the communities are going to move forward, they're aware that that's the logical next step is to go forward with an outreach plan.
Gotcha. Other questions, comments, ideas?
Dwayne Martin has one, Peter.
Oh, hey, Dwayne, sorry about that. I was taking copious notes.
No worries. So I don't know who this would land on for a question, but if communities are considering going forward and you've run the calculations to estimate what should be charged based, you know, on whatever sort of calculation is decided upon, is it recommended to have a grace period, give people a little bit of warning? It seems like most of the fees that are calculated are not that high, but some people may be upset still and want to sort of budget for it, if you will.
We don't typically see that when we implement them. And it's more if you do really well with your public outreach and education along the way, like they already know their numbers before they get their first bill.
And I will say New London and New Britain are kind of a unique case because they actually kind of put their utilities through under the radar. There actually wasn't a whole lot of public outreach. They really did kind of hide what they were doing. And I know that for the first couple of months, New London did receive a little bit of negativity from some of the towns or from some of the residents. And that seems to have subsided with time. I think that, you know, you'll find probably the same thing with New Britain. I've heard that they've kind of are in that kind of little bit of a period where they're kind of receiving some kind of negative comments and criticisms, but they're hoping to see kind of that same die down that New London did.
Great. Any other committee members have a question before I go to Maureen? Maureen, did you have your hand up for a question or comment?
Sorry, my camera is not working. It is on, but it is not displaying. I was actually going to mention New Britain because the framing of their program there is clean water. Everybody wants clean water. That's sort of the approach they've taken in marketing the program. And I think Mark Moriarty presented at the CAFM conference last week. And I don't know that they were under the radar, but I think that they had less negative feedback than they expected.
Yeah, I think it really does depend on the different ways that you kind of push your utility through. I also know we had a webinar featuring a guest from the city of Dover, New Hampshire. And the first time they tried to push their utility through, really under the radar, no public common, no outreach at all, and it got completely shut down. And this time around, it's been far more successful due to the fact that they have reached out to so many stakeholders, and they've held kind of ad hoc committee meetings involving, you know, property owners, different types of property owners from across the city, and it's been far more successful. So I think it really does kind of depend on the situation.
So I had a question, this may be for Cindy or Joe. When you calculate the equivalent residential unit, without getting deep into the formula, how did you do that in the Southeastern COG example?
So for the municipalities in that pilot study, we did an evaluation of all the residential properties and got an average square footage, but we actually went with the mean. And my background is more stormwater. I've done a few stormwater utilities with our financial piece, but I'm not the financial person. I'm more of a evaluation. But it was with respect to the evaluation of the impervious cover per property, per just the residential. And for each municipality, they came up with a different square footage as their single family unit. And then that is then the ERU that's used for your commercial, industrial, other properties.
Okay, so once you get the analysis done, it's relatively easy to apply that.
Yes.
Okay. great.
And sometimes the stormwater utilities will come up with a tier where there's like a different single family units. You know, one might be a basic that's a small residential. Then you might have like duplexes or ones that are maybe in a different, more affluent area, and you have, you know, maybe more impervious area. So there could also be a tiered. So
great. What other questions or comments might the committee members have before we move to the next discussion of next steps? I have one last question for me is when it gets to the, I'll say for lack of a better term, drainage sheds, as someone said earlier that, you know, what happened, just because you have a line on a map relative to a jurisdiction, municipal jurisdiction, are the drainage sheds, if you will, watersheds well mapped within the capital region? Is anyone aware of that? And is there any logic to setting up something along those lines?
Do you want to respond, Mary? Because I know UConn has those drainage areas.
Yeah, I was just going to say we've a MS4 map on our website. You can also check out CT Eco that does go through all of those different watersheds and the boundaries that they cross. If you were to look at it on a more regional scale, but yeah, I can put that link in the chat.
Just Lori.
I have a question. Out our way, we have a lot of wells and everything. My question is, with people's water softeners, they're putting direct salt right into your water system and it goes into the leach fields and everything else. So we've had a few problems where people had faulty wells and tried to blame it on the town and everything else. Have you run into very much of this with water softeners?
I have not. I don't know if others have.
I haven't specifically, but obviously, you know, Tallinn is wrestling with that very issue right now at a very, you know, public level.
Okay, thank you.
All righty, Matt, do you want to maybe talk a little bit about, Michael Looney.
Thanks, Peter. And Mary, thank you. And thank you, Cindy, for the excellent presentation. Cindy, I had one quick question, and pardon me for my ignorance. How much of New Britain and New London's sewer system is separated versus combined?
Neither of those communities are combined, so they're separated okay. systems.
Okay, just wanted to double check on that.
Yep. Okay. Cindy, I suppose, Cindy, that might be relevant because he's thinking because Hartford is combined. I know you did the analysis for the Providence region. I don't know if there's anything you want to add there related to that because Providence is combined and you did look at the stormwater utility feasibility there.
And that evaluation included Providence and all six municipalities around it. And it was very unique where, and it was a regional evaluation, and it was very unique where the different municipalities were serviced by different water districts. And then also some of them were combined and some of them were partially combined and not. So there were quite a few scenarios with the NBC and the water districts with respect to types of billing and stuff, as well as different, instead of one, we did one with all six municipalities and we did a regional with splitting it into two different ones based on their billing. And then we did individuals for all of them. So, but that area as well is some of it's combined and some of it's not.
Okay. Yeah. That's sounds like more of an analog to Hartford situation.
It does. Already, have I missed anyone's hand? So if I haven't, Matt, all yours and talk about next steps.
All right, thank you, Peter. So what we would suggest, and Maureen Goulet from our team has been helping me out with this, something similar but a little bit different from the Southeast Cog project. What we're suggesting is that we proceed to conduct a regional stormwater plan with a feasibility study component, you know, trying to look at our various stormwater management needs across the region, because arguably they're different, right? Our MDC towns like Hartford and West Hartford and parts of Windsor and Wethersfield, perhaps East Hartford, you know, may have a different set of issues than our more rural communities. So trying to ascertain the different set of needs across the region. And as part of that project, take a look at where a stormwater utility could be useful. So as we've discussed in our recent meetings on this topic, we asked our town attorney to look at whether or not there was express authority under state law to create a regional stormwater utility. Right now, there is not. The legislation to allow municipalities to create their own stormwater utilities is relatively recent, as Mary explained. There is a group convened by CCM and will participate in this that is looking at the viability of allowing the creation of a regional utility. But our attorney did explain that you could back into it more or less because two or more towns could share the services of a utility through an interlocal agreement. And an entity like the COG could help manage such a utility. But we're not quite at that step yet. So what we want to suggest is let's prepare a regional plan looking at the variety of needs across the region. We'll specifically look at the feasibility of a stormwater utility as part of that project. And meanwhile, we'll continue to participate on the legislative advocacy around the feasibility of allowing regional utilities. So that's what we're contemplating here. So between our last meeting and today, a state grant opportunity did become available and we decided to take advantage of it. And Maureen worked very quickly and I wanna thank her for that. We did submit an application to DEEP's Climate Resilience Fund seeking the maximum amount, $250,000 in funding so that we could retain a consultant to prepare a regional plan with this feasibility study component. So Maureen, do you want to add to my explanation there? Maybe talk a little bit about the timeline as outlined under the grant, then we can take questions and additional discussion.
So yes, we did a very quick application to the Climate Resilience Fund at DEEP. We submitted it basically at the last minute, but we did have a couple of folks in-house review it. You know, I know there's going to be a couple of rounds of this fund as well if this doesn't come through, but we put together an application for planning. So that's the track one application. And I think that was submitted November 10th. I'm not exactly sure when they're expecting to make awards. But we did submit everything that was necessary. And if this committee does decide that they would like to move forward with a planning program and we do get the grant funds, that will allow us to move forward.
Thanks, Maureen. Great. So this is a little bit analogous to our waste management project, which I know several of you are involved in as well. You know, where we're starting off with a plan with various phases. And we do anticipate, you know, this project would take some time, perhaps roll out over a period of years. And we're recommending we start at this planning stage as opposed to jumping to the establishment of various independent municipal stormwater utilities. And you all certainly have the discretion to do that right now, if you choose to do so under state law. But we're recommending this planning approach first so that we can get a better handle on the different types of needs across the region. And at the end of the day, you know, some number of us might be interested in being part of a regional stormwater utility. And then others may be more interested in sharing resources around MS4 that would be outside of the utility. We just want to start with kind of a broader look first.
Great. Thank you, Matt and Maureen. And thank you for taking the advantage of the opportunity that presented itself on relatively short notice. So one of the questions that Matt, clarifying questions I have, are you essentially thinking something along the lines of what Southeastern COG did in like existing conditions, generally an overview compliance with MS4 and some identification of gaps or at least what we all have on our quote unquote CIPs now? Is that kind of, and then looking at the feasibility, the logical and legal aspects of a utility?
I think there'd be some elements to that, Peter. Let me start off and then ask Cindy and Joe if they want to add anything to it. I think Southeast, their project is a little bit different in that they've got four towns that seem prepared to go out and establish their own local stormwater utilities. I don't think we're there yet. We also have an interest at the end of the day, I think, in creating a regional entity. So what I'm suggesting is we start off with this planning study, trying to assess the needs, the different set of needs across the region. But some of the specific data points and data sets that you mentioned, I think would be incorporated as part of this. Mm-hmm. Joe, I don't know if you could elaborate a little on that.
Yeah, I agree with what you said, Matt. To add to it, I would just say that, you know, you'd have to look at whichever towns are interested in either their own or regional would be the ones that you'd move forward with. And if not all, what is it, 38 towns want to do that, then so be it. And maybe only some do. But ultimately, I think what makes more sense here is the regional approach, potentially. And from that respect, you would look at, you know, the cost savings, like Mary Looney's presentation was getting at, the cost savings of towns working together, whether it be doing MS4 or doing, you know, stormwater projects. I know, Peter, you mentioned the watershed boundaries. It was one of the things I had talked to Matt Hart about when we were preparing, you know, this presentation for this is, you know, the watersheds know no town boundaries, right? And they're either impaired or they're not impaired. And so from a regional approach, you can kind of focus on which watersheds actually require the most attention and not necessarily within your town boundary. Like it could be that, you know, certain water bodies cross, you know, 2-3 more towns. And if the highest priority watershed was that one, then that's where you focus your time on. So I think, unlike what we did with CCOG, I think CCOG stopped at, you know, it's looking at towns individually. That's what Cindy was saying. They weren't interested in like a regional evaluation. The study for CROG would certainly evaluate the regional and bring that in and also look at watersheds. Cindy, I don't know if you want to add anything on top of that.
No, I think you did well, Joe.
What are some other folks? Thoughts in terms of this next recommended or suggested steps? Stanley, I see you pushing buttons.
Yes, I support it wholeheartedly. I think it's very needed. I like the approach. There are certainly issues in Bloomfield that we need to address. I'm very excited about this proposition.
Thank you, Stanley, for your input.
I agree. I think the approach makes sense.
Well, I think there's I think part of it, Matt, would really be getting, from my perspective, is really understanding what that scope of service is, and that obviously kind of putting a little bit of flesh on the bones on the concept, because it could be a lot of work there, just because of the geographic span that we have and how different each of our communities, as you described earlier, what kind of stormwater issues we all have. So, but I concur. I like the approach, and starting out high level and then working down into sub-region, you know, potentially sub-regional basis as well.
A good point, Peter. And I think we all know in our world, $250,000 sounds like a lot of money, but it only gets you so far, right? This would be an initial step, you know, that would certainly lead to more iterative steps around the establishment of a utility as one example.
Mm-hmm. No.
So, if I may, just for comparison, because we didn't mention the dollar, just for the CCOG that had the four towns, the dollars was $70,000, just to give you an idea of where we were at with that funding.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. So Matt, what is your, from a process perspective, we could certainly bring this back to the next full Municipal Services Committee if you felt there was a need. We've got a pretty good group cross-section here today right now, but what were you thinking in terms of mechanically what some next steps are is to bring folks along?
Yeah, thank you, Peter. So what I would suggest, and again, we did submit the application, you know, exercised a little bit of executive privilege there with the timelines. You know, we can keep the larger Municipal Services Committee informed of the status of that application. If we're not successful, we can look at other funding sources as well. I would suggest, Peter, we track the project as part of, under the umbrella of the larger Municipal Services Committee. And then when we need to have a more specific conversation about the project, we could hold a special meeting like we're doing today.
Good. I think that sounds appropriate. So anybody else have any questions pop up or comments pop up for either Mary or Joe and Cindy? Okay, I don't see any. So again, Matt and other staff at CROG, thank you very much for moving this forward. And we'll keep this on the radar at Municipal Services Committee, regardless of where the state grant goes over the course of the next, hopefully 60, 90 days, they'll be making some decisions. But maybe at the same time, we can be keeping our eye open for other possible resources to initiate this regional assessment. So, all right. I know Stanley has some money hidden somewhere. We'll get it. We'll get him to contribute some of that, huh, Stanley? All right. I'll match it 50%. How's that, Stanley? All right. So thank you very much, folks. Appreciate your time. Again, thank you to the presenters. Very informative. And we will see, just as a reminder, Municipal Services Committee is going to meet on, I believe it's the 6th, on Tuesday the 6th at noontime for our combined November-December regular meeting. So thank you very much.
Thank you all so much. Take care.